Good evening, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Gulf Manor Synagogue, School of Jewish Studies, here in Cincinnati, Ohio. With broken hearts and with flags down at half-mast nationwide, once again, there's a massacre in the United States. It's just that this time, all the victims are Jewish. The pain is, and the shock, just indescribable. My brother sent me a little something in a text. It showed up at Shlomo Carlbach, and it said, if you're Jewish enough to be hated for being a Jew, then you're Jewish enough to be loved by me and every other Jewish person for being a Jew. Let's keep that in mind as we move forward, as we try to move forward, and understand we're all one big family. We don't all agree with each other on everything, but we're still all Jews, and we have to remember that. And we're getting some very beautiful and thoughtful gestures. I'm at Walgreens with my son in the parking lot. Black woman says, we're praying for you, we're thinking of you. We had a little conversation. And Gulf Manor Synagogue received a note today from the Kennedy Heights Presbyterian Church. Open it up, and it says, we are praying for you. This is America, a country of 300 million plus people, virtually all of whom get along with each other. But there are exceptions, and there are bad people out there, evil people. Some of them are not well, and good people suffer. Let's hope and pray that we can get through this and remember the lessons that we've got to learn from them, that we really ought to just get along with each other. Got to get along with each other so much. Got to learn to love each other again, put aside petty differences. You do things your way, I do things my way. Listen, as an Orthodox Jew, I got a certain outlook on things, and I understand that, and I get that, and all that. But at the end of the day, conservative Jews, Reformed Jews, Orthodox Jews, we all have to just learn to live with each other and love each other and get along with each other, and that's the lesson that we got to glean from this. Tonight we're going to study in the memory of the 11 Jews who were massacred in the atrocity in Pittsburgh. Strikes home to me anyway, though I live in Cincinnati. I'm a native New Yorker, spent a good amount of my life in New York City, several years in Jerusalem. I got married and moved to Baltimore, 2 years in Baltimore, Huntington, Long Island for law school, 1 year in Boston for law school. So I've been around a little bit in the U.S., and my wife and I, because of her job, we interviewed for her job, and we went to Pittsburgh for Shabbos here and along the way back to Cincinnati, Shabbos there. Beautiful community, wonderful people, beautiful shuls, a kolo, kosher restaurants. And up the block, if I'm not mistaken, from the kolo is this particular synagogue, this Tree of Life congregation. And it struck me as a very, very large structure when I first saw it. As I drove up, we were driving around from Murray Avenue, and it's at the corner of Wilkins Avenue, I believe. I forgot the actual street that you take from Murray Ave to Wilkins, but that's where the kolo is, and you take it all the way up. And it's a very large structure, and I think indeed that is the one. So our hearts go out to all those who lost members of their families, wonderful people, cut down many of them in their later years, and they had lived their years in the United States. One of them was a Holocaust survivor, and to get gunned down in a shul on Shabbos morning, just incredible.
I think that was corrected. The 97-year-old was not a Holocaust survivor. Uh-huh. There was another one that was a Holocaust survivor that was running a few months late, and therefore was not killed.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Berlick corrects me. Seems that, I think her name is Ruth Malinger, she passed. She is not the Holocaust survivor, yet another woman was. And that other woman who survived because she wasn't there. It came late. At all events, we're going to dedicate tonight's Torah study to their memories, as we did for Emma Ron and Smecha on Monday afternoon. And let us hope and pray that we, as Jewish people, can learn to get along. Today, and probably forevermore, we are Pittsburgh. We're all Pittsburgh. We're all Yeshivat Merkaz Rav Kook, if you remember that massacre. We're all Ma'alot, and we're all Efrat, and we're all Yerushalayim, and we're all in this together. And we're all Buenos Aires, and we're all France, and we're all England. This is what it means to be a family. So let us begin, as we've said several times in the past, this is somewhat difficult material. It's a little bit dry. There's not much in the way of narrative or prayer, both of which can lend themselves to study, much more edifying study than just reading descriptions of architectural objects and how things were built. It doesn't really move me personally. That's my fault, but that's the way it is. So we're on page 30. I'm sorry, we're on chapter 7, verse 34. We're going to try to make an effort to complete the chapter tonight or get as far into it as we can. We'll read every pasuk, read every Rashi, all the commentaries, and if there's something worth discussing, we'll discuss it. Otherwise, if it's just pure, it was the four corners this and it was the molten that, I'm not sure what else to give you. We're going to have to wait for me to pontificate in chapter 8. Well, that's quite a poem. We'll have to wait for me to pontificate in chapter 8. Here we go. Chapter 7, verse 34. V'arba k'sefos el arba pinos ha-mechona ha-echos. And there were four undersetters. Now, there's a new word I've got to look up. Undersetters, but I kind of think I know what that means. Maybe underlying, undergirding things. And there were four undersetters at the four corners of each base. Men ha-mechona k'sefeha. The undersetters were of the base itself. Is there anything there for us to read? 34, yeah, and there were four undersetters. A Rashi, we're going to do all the Rashis, but in English. Excuse me. As I have explained above in verse 30, and the four corners thereof and undersetters, that's what's said over there. He did not mention it here except to say the undersetters were of the base itself. What should I tell you? We move on to the next pasuk. I just don't have anything to add to that. Uvarosha Machona Chatsi Ha'ama Goma Agol Saviv. And in the top of the base there was a round compass of half a cubit high. Thou Rosha Machona Yidoseha Umiskiroseha Mimena. And on the top of the base, its ledges and its borders were one piece of it. Let's see what's that all about. If we can find out, 35, Rashi in English. There was a round compass of half a cubit high. This is a reference to the partition, as I explained above in verse 31, which was around the opening on top of the base, and the uppermost cubit of the chapiter was square. I'll tell you, I think that Rashi actually knew what he was talking about. I mean, I think that these men were able to actually envision what was written over here. They were able to kind of get a really good idea because they're working with it. I can't. I can just read this to you and I got to just keep moving. But Rashi and others, they seem to be able to envision what it might have looked like. And on the top of the base, it's ledges. It says Rashi, they are the tablets of brass which were mentioned above in verse 30. And the Mitzvah's David is quoted here, the tablets were lying attached to the top of the base. The tablets were lying attached to the top of the base, overlapping to the side of the base, reaching beyond the borders, which was the low-hanging partition, and were finally connected to the hub of the wheel, the Mitzvah stone. And its borders, it continues, this is going to be a Rashi, the borders were one piece of it. It says, Rashi, the lower borders were poured together with it and was therefore all one piece, and he did not attach them afterwards. Okay. Verse 36. I'm sorry, people. Mrs. Berlick, you're always welcome to join in. I mean, jump in whenever you want. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to say a thing to it. Vayifatach al haluchos yedoseha al miskiroseh. But you know what's really telling? What's really telling is this. If you take a look at the Tolus Aaron, that is a commentary which tells you where to look for Talmud and Midrashic sources, there's nothing there. What's amazing is that for several pages now, and I do mean that, for a few pages already, going back easily to Pasuk Chav Tes 29, there's not even an attempt, 27, okay? Okay, 27 over here to 37, these 10 psukim are not discussed by our sages in the Talmudim or the Midrashim. And that's really something to me.
Well, what's even more interesting is how much Rashi there is on this.
Right. That is truly fascinating. There's a lot of Rashi on this stuff. I'm going to have a little drink. There's a lot of Rashi over here, but there's almost zero. Okay, yes, there is zero. Absolute zero. From Midrash and Talmud. Amazing. Oh, yeah. Oh, a little cup of... A little Coke every once in a while is exactly what I need. Here we go. No phlegm. Sorry about that. Here we go. 36. Vayifatach al haluchos yedoseha. Ah, I got somebody calling in over here, and that's Jake. Now, why would Jake be calling in? What's he got to say? You know what? I never do this, people, but I'm going to take this call for a second. Got to speak up. That's what I got to do. Okay. People, I'm going to speak up. Here we go. I hope that's good. Okay. Vayifatach al haluchos yedoseha v'al miskiroseha kruvim arayos v'simoros. And he graved on the tablets, on its ledges, and on its borders, kruvim, cherubim, lions, and palm trees, Kima'ar ish v'loyos saviv. According to the attachment of each, with wreaths round about. Okay, this must have been something. He graved on the tablets, borders, ledges, kruvim, lions, palm trees, with wreaths round about. Must have been really something to look at. Let's take a look and see what the Rashi will tell us. We do have some extensive stuff here, especially in the next pasuk. This is a little bit less. This is 36. Here we go. And he graved on the tablets, on its ledges, and on its borders. Here's the Rashi in English. On the lower ones, on both of them, on the ledges and on the borders, he engraved and inscribed kruvim, cherubim, lions. And in parentheses it says, and palm trees. This is not found in other editions. All right. According to the attachment of each with wreaths, he engraved around the likeness of a male and female that are joined by their arms. Thus did our sages explain this. Says Rashi, cited from the Gemara Yuma 54a. Well, that's fascinating. And we continue, according to the attachment of each. The word bema... Sorry.
There's your Talmud.
There's my Talmud. My Talmud reference. That's right. Thank you. And they should, maybe they should have theoretically put my... Okay. Okay. You're right. Should have maybe in the, should have been the Tolus Aaron. Here we go. According to the attachment, the word bema'ar is an expression of attachment and joining. As a male that is joined to a female, and its meaning is, quote, a man with his attachment. And according to its ordinary sense, the word loyos is an expression of attachment and old French solor. This will be translated as, quote, there were attachments there made as the joining of a man, and the joining was in the manner we explained at the beginning of this comment. So says Rashi. Okay, so that's 36. We go on to 37. Kazos asar es eser hamachonos. After this manner, he made the 10 bases. Mutzak Echad, there was one casting. Achas Ketzev, I'm sorry, Mutzak Echad, one casting. Mida Achas, one measure. Ketzev Echad, Lechulana, and one size to all of them. One size was fitting all. Let's go take a look and see what this is all about. He made 10 bases. There was one cast, one measure, and one size to all these 10 bases. Rashi's going to really go out on us over here. There's a lot here. Let's go and see what he says. One casting, Mutzak Echad. As he cast the first base, he similarly cast them all. So says Rashi. The following is an explanation from the author of the temple structure. A book that I'm not 100% familiar with. Here we go. And the work of the base was in this manner. All right. He made four copper wheels, as it says in verse 30, and each base had four copper wheels, end quote, as the form of a large wagon. Each base had four copper wheels as the form of a large wagon, and the height of each wheel was a cubit and a half, and the work of the wheels was like the work of a chariot wheel, a wheel within a wheel, so that he may be able to move them wherever the spirit or will may be to move them there, and move them without being necessary to turn it over this way or that. And the distance which is from one wheel to the next, from east to west, was four cubits. And likewise from north to south, for it was square. Not long like our wagons. It was a square wagon. So all the sides are equidistant to each other. And this is what he said earlier in verse 27. Four cubits was the length of the base, and four cubits the breadth thereof. A thick and long rod was inserted into the two wheels, which were from east to west, the northern ones. And so also, as in those wheels which were in these, a rod placed and inserted in those which were from the north to the south, the eastern ones, and so also in the western ones. And the verse called these rods Yados. And this is what he said, Bidosehem. And the meaning of the Gabehem, that is the hub of the wheels in which these rods turn. So again, and the meaning of the Gabehem, that is the hub of the wheels in which these rods turn. And they are called Gav, a little hill, because that is the highest part of the wheel when it is lying on the ground. And likewise, the hub of all round objects, is its highest point, because all sides are drawn from it. And the meaning of the chishukehem, they are the outer circles which bind together chishurehem, that they are the thin pieces of wood resembling arms which are inserted and placed from the hub to the rim. And this is from the expression, quote, and their fillets were of silver, Exodus 27:10. And that is the wheel which rolls on the ground. And we are accustomed to make a circular piece of metal around it. And it is called in the language of the Mishnah in chapter 11 of the Tractate Kalim, page 80, Sovev Shel Galgal. But here the Sovev was not necessary because it was all made of copper. And Miskaros means a sort of tablet was made for them above the axles in the four corners in the square. And this is what he said, quote, their borders were four square, not round. That's to be found earlier in verse 31. and they enclosed the wagon on its four sides, and was therefore called miskaros, enclosures. And on these borders or enclosures were boards of copper, nisarim, which the verse called Sarnei Nechoshes. And this word Sarnei is a word of disarranged letters. And on them, that is, on the outside and not on the top, it was made as the rungs of a ladder. And between one rung and the other, there were other borders. And on them was the form of oxen. See verse 29 above. And the boards went up beyond the borders until it reached opposite the height of the wheels. They were continuously sloping like a pointy hat and resembling the covering of a covered wagon until they reached opposite the height of the wheel. And there they were drawn together until they covered it, except above the center. They did not cover, but there was a round hole in them. Its diameter was a cubit and a half. This covering was called Koseres, and the hole which is in it, Pi HaKoseres. And this is what he said earlier in verse 31, quote, and the mouth thereof was round after the work of a base, a cubit and a half. I'm reading from the Judaica Press Tanakh. 1 Kings chapter 7, and it's verse 37. Thank you. Okay, this covering was called Koseres, so the hole which is in it, Pi HaKoseres. And this is what he said in verse 31, quote, and the mouth thereof was round after the work of a base, a cubit and a half, end quote. And around this hole, a partition goes up a half cubit in height. And this is what he said in verse 35, and in the top of the base there was a round compass of half a cubit high. And into this partition the cane is entered and inserted. For the cane is a receptacle which receives the laver. Since the laver is the bathing area, the laver is inserted into the cane, and the cane is in the midst of this partition, which is on the wagon. And the lower half cubit of the cane was round in the same measurement of the height of the partition, which is on the round hole, which is in the base on top. And the cane rises above this partition one cubit, and this is what was said, quote, in verse 31, and the mouth of it within the chapiter and above was a cubit, end quote. And therefore we have three cubits in the total height of the base, since the wheel was a cubit and a half, and the round partition was a half cubit, and the cubit which the height of the cane protrudes over it, and this cubit is square. And it had four undersetters in its four corners, and this is what the verse said in 34, and there were four undersetters of each base. The undersetters were of the base itself, because the lower part of the laver was slanting at the bottom so that it should fit into the cane. And in order that it should not fall into it more than the desired amount, therefore these undersetters were made to carry and support it. This ends the quotation of the temple structure. Wow. There's a lot there, and I cannot really, truly do any more to it than that.
Okay, so what I'm beginning to envision is that the laver was like set upon a chariot so that they could wheel it around, I suppose, so that they could go to get water, fill it with water, and bring it back.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. It was a water carrying thing. And it really helps to have wheels.
Especially if you have a very big ladder.
Right, and if you got to schlep a lot of water, nice to have wheels with it.
That's what I'm...
A good idea.
Advising.
Right, very well said. Wow, Coke, yeah. I don't drink soda during the week, so a little cheating going on over here. But I'm allowed. I'm a big boy. These are my vices. I like French fries and I like Coke. Okay, here we go. Where are we? 38. Excuse me. Vayas lamed ches, vayas asara kioros nechoshes. He made 10 lavers of brass. Arbaim bas yochil akior hayachad. Each laver contained 40 measures. Arba ba'arma hakior hayachad. Every labor was 4 cubits. Kiorachad alamachona, one labor upon each of the 10 bases. Let me read that again. Kiorachad alamachona ha'achas le'eser hamachonas. One labor upon each of the 10 bases. So he made 10 labors of brass, each one containing 40 saw, or 40 measures. Every labor was 4 cubits, one upon each of the 10 bases. One labor upon each of the 10 bases. Okay.
So are they each on a chariot? Okay.
10 labors of brass, each one containing 40 measures. Every labor was 4 cubits, one labor upon each of the 10 bases.
Right. And were the 10 bases each on a chariot?
That's the question. Let's see if it's discussed. May not be.
Maybe we didn't pop it when it was.
Right. Let's go see what, if anything, is discussed over here by Rashi. And he made 10 labors. It's written in 2 Chronicles, Divrei Yamim Beis, in chapter 4, verse 6, quote, such things as belong to the burnt offering, they washed in them. End quote. Now here comes Rashi. Only the insides of the burnt offerings were washed in the labor, not the peace offerings, the shlamim, which were eaten by owners in any part of the city. See the Rashi here, and also see Rashi at 2 Chronicles.
Okay.
Not sure if
okay.
that answers your concern.
No, it's over here what we read before from this explanation by the author of the temple structure. He made 4 copper wheels, and each base had 4 copper wheels
mm-hmm.
in the form of a large wagon. So, yes, each of the laborers was on a wagon.
On a wagon. Thank you. Thank you so much for pointing that out. Well done. Good. Good, good, good. 39. Lamed Tes, Vayitain es hamechonos chamesh al kesef abayis miyamin v'chamesh al kesef abayis mismolo. 39, he set the bases, 5 on the right side of the house, 5 on the left side of the house. V'sayam nasan mikesef abayis hayamanis kedma mimul negev. And he set the sea on the right side of the house eastward, toward the south. Okay, anything on 39, there is small. On the side of the house, against the right side of the house, or temple, known as the Ezra's Kohanim. So this is Rashi in the Radak. And we continue. But on the next page, we're going to continue the footnote in the next page, top of 81, on the right side of the house. It was in the southeast corner, extended along the eastern wall, from the south side toward the north side. And the following is Kedma Mul Negev, the northeast corner against the space which is between the northern wall of the house and the wall of the court. Okay? And the northern wall alone is called Mimul Negev, extended and removed far away from the south. And Mul and Mimul are not translated the same, says Rashi. Right? This is kind of davening it up, sort of. Ya'as Chiram Esakiyoros. Chiram made the lavers, these kioros, he made these bathing areas, these lavers. That's how Ya'im v'es ha-mizrakos. He also made the shovels and the basins. V'yachal Chiram la'asos es kol ha-melach asher asol ha-melach Shlomo beis Hashem. Chiram finished doing all the work which he did for King Shlomo in the house of God. So, wow. Chiram finished doing all the work which he did for King Solomon in the house of God. Pretty impressive. Let's see if there's a footnote for us to explicate that. Chiram made. Yep, this is it. Chiram made. Let's see. He made the lavers, the shovels, the basins. Says Rashi. Actually, here it's going to be a Ramban. There is no special significance in spelling his name Chiram and then Chiram in the same sentence. Okay, now maybe I should have picked up on that. Chiram, true. And Hiram, true enough, all both in the same sense, a different spelling of his name. One has a vav and one does not have a vav. And I don't have a better answer for you than the fact that the Radak already thought about it, and he said, you know what? Don't be so the Ramban, and don't be so concerned. He's sending us over to Genesis 36, verse 26. No special significance in the different spelling of the name. See the Malbim on chapter 7, verse 14. Okay? And Hiram made. We continue in that pasuk. He made the lavers, the shovels, the basins. Okay? And Rebbe said the kioros and the siros, as mentioned in verse 15, are one and the same, meaning pots or pans, as we read in the scriptures, quote, like a pan of fire among wood. See Zechariah 12:6. And likewise, quote, and he struck it into the pan. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 14, Rashi, source unknown. Some attribute this to Rashi rather than our sages. Instead of Amar Rabbi, it says Omer Ani. And I say, often, okay, Rashi, source unknown. Some attribute this to Rashi rather than our sages. Instead of Amar Rabbi, it says Omer Ani, I say. See the Malbim. I wish I had more to say right now. I'm just completely silent. When was the last time you saw me just completely, like, you know, dead in the water, like, okay, we'll just keep going? I usually have something of either a Meshuggah streak, you know, vein to say. So I got some kind of something along those lines or whatever, but over here I'm just kind of quiet. Okay? Now, sorry, the labors. That was good. The lavers, or the pots, according to our sages mentioned in the previous Rashi, they were of copper, and they were used to remove the ashes therein from the altar. So says Rashi. The shovels, copper shovels, which they call Wedel and Schaufel in German. Okay. And that's exactly right. Shekoren vidul, it's called vidul, ba'ashkenaz. I only see one word coming up. Vidul, and where's the shaufel? I don't think I see that one in the Rashi, at least not just yet. Maybe that's my fault. Okay. The copper shovels, which they call Wedel and Schaufel in Germany, they were used to rake the ashes with them into the pots. And the basins, the Mizrach Kos, they were used to collect the blood for sprinkling. So says the Mitzvah Tzion. Two rows of pomegranates. Have I gotten there yet? I don't even know where I'm holding anymore. I know that I think I just did, well, we're doing 40. So 40, I don't see any mention of two rows of pomegranates. That's going to have to wait. That's in 42. Let me get that out. That is 42. So let me correct this. Okay. Good. It looks like it's verse 42. So let's do 41. Mem Aleph, Amudim Shnayim, V'gulos HaKosaros HaShel Rosh Amudim Shnayim. We're in chapter 7 of 1 Kings, and we're on verse 41. 7:41. The two pillars and the two bowls of the chapiters that were on the top of the pillars. V'hasevachos Shnayim, and the two networks. L'chasos eshtei gulos akosoros, to cover the two bowls of the chapiters. The two networks to cover the two bowls of the chapiters, which were on the top of the pillars.
I think.
No idea.
In today's day and age, when people are trying to listen to this, maybe instead of saying networks, we should say works of netting.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I just got it. Yeah, because you can't say networks anymore without, you know, meaning...
Without getting people really confused.
Right. You're going to be thinking about a computer platform of some sort, a network. It's not that way. It wasn't that way 3,000 years ago. And the two networks, net-works, you know, cute. Very cute. Okay. And that was 41. Did I finish it? Amudim Shnayim, Vagulo Sakosar Sashir, Rosh Amudim Shnayim. Vasivachos Shnayim, Lachasos, Shte Gulo Sakosaros, Asher Rosh Amudim. The two pillars and the two boxes of the pillars, the two pillars and the two bowls of the chapiters that were on the top of the pillars, and the two networks, or the two works of netting, to cover the two bowls of the chapiters, which were on the top of the pillars. And no, there's no mefarshim that they bring down on that pasuk. If they're not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. We're going to continue on, verse 42. That's the rimonim arba meyas l'shtei hasavachos, and the 400 pomegranates for the two networks. Here it is again. That's the rimonim arba meyas l'shtei hasavachos, and the 200 pomegranates for the two networks. Shnei turim rimonim. La sevacha ha'achas l'chasos ha'shtei gulos ha'kosaras asher p'nei ha'amudim. Two rows of pomegranates for each network to cover the two bowls of the chapiters that were upon the pillars.
Now to get two rows of pomegranates to cover the two chapiters, they have to be very large chapiters
to handle
200 pomegranates.
Sure. Even if they're small, 200 are going to make an impact. And if they're regulation size, like we're familiar with, 200 is an enormous amount. Right. Good point. Thank you, Mrs. Bella, for that. 400 pomegranates for the two networks. Shtei Sevachos. Mem Gimel 43. Wait, there's a 42. Here it is, 42. There's a footnote here. Two rows of pomegranates. There were 100 pomegranates in his immediate...
In each row.
There were 100 pomegranates in each row hanging by chains. 100 pomegranates in each row, hanging by chains. So says Rashi. Good.
So they're not really on the thing that
right.
They're
hanging. Right.
Suspended above.
Yep. 43. Mem Gimel Ves Hamechonos Aser, and the 10 bases. That's a Kioros Asara Ala Mechonos, and the 10 bases and the 10 levers on the base. And the 10 labors, rather. The 10 bases and the 10 labors on the bases. But nothing there to explicate that. 44. That's Hayam Ha'echot. And the one sea, that's Abakar Shneim Asar Tachas Hayam. And the one sea and the 12 oxen under the sea. Tachas Hayam, under the sea. Not sure what that means. But
We talked about this. It was sitting on, I forget what they were made out of, where they were, they were facing outward, so that you had them on all sides,
mm-hmm.
and it was sitting on top of their bodies, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the faces sticking out.
Got it. Thank you. Okay, 45. Mem, hey, we're getting there. There's a siros, there's a yoim, there's a mizrakos, there's kol ha-kelem ha-ehel, asher ha-sachirim le-melech Shlomo, beis Adonai, nechoshes mimorot. Might as well say the whole pasuk in its entirety. 45 in English, and the pots, and the shovels, and the basins, and all these vessels, which Hiram made for King Shlomo in the house of God, were of bright copper. Nechoshes mimorot, bright copper. Let's take a look. And all these vessels, here's a radak. The traditional scriptural text without vowels spells Aleph He Lamed, meaning tent, and so the traditional scriptural text without vowels spells Ohel, meaning tent, and referring to the Moed, the tabernacle, suggesting that these vessels were made similar to those of the tabernacle. The Radak and the Targum apparently disagree. Radak and the Targum apparently agrees. Very good. Of bright copper. All these things, pots, shovels, basins, vessels, etc., were of bright copper. The Mitzvah Tzion renders Mimorot clear and bright, whereas Radak, the Ralbag, and the Mitzvah David translate this clear, it's translated as clear and pure. The Ramban in Leviticus says it means smooth and shiny.
Which would be bright. Shiny would be bright.
Shiny would be bright, right. That would help out. Because bright copper is how they want to translate it over here on the street. 43. Or is it 46? 46. Bekikar hayardain yitzakam hamelech b'ma'aveh ha'adama. In the plain of the Jordan, did the king cast them? Bein Sukkos v'bein Tzorason. In the thick day between Shabbos, between Sukkos and Tzorason. In the plain of the Jordan, did the king cast them? In the thick clay between Sukkos and Tzorason. Let's see, 46, anything there. The king did cast them. That is, Rashi says, he melted them and poured them according to their form. It is true, sorry?
I'm looking at that. I found it out.
Okay, good. It is strange indeed. Here might be Rabbi Hochberg or Rabbi Rosenberg. It is strange indeed, of all the various vessels made of the most precious metals, none were cast by the king, but by the craftsmen themselves. Why then was this attributed to the king more so than any of the other vessels? Yeah, because it says here the king cast them in the thick clay. So why attribute anything to him? Abba now feels that the king intended to make certain that no foreign matter be mixed into the copper in order to keep it pure, and thereby mislead it. I'm sorry, not to keep it pure, and therefore insisted it be cast in his presence. Again, the Abarbanel feels that the king intended to make certain that no foreign matter be mixed into the copper in order to keep it pure, and therefore insisted it be cast in his presence. This was considered as though the king cast them, even though he did not physically do that. He had, you know, laborers for that. But because it was under his hashgacha, it was as if he was doing it. In the thick clay, in the plain of the Jordan, the king cast them in the thick clay. The Ma'aveh Ha'adama. Says Rashi, in the thick clay, as the Targum renders, Ba'oveh Gergashtar, in the thickness of the clay. And Gergashtar is a dust, the quality of which is ideal for casting. Okay. Is the Targum rendered Ba'ove Gergashta in the thickness of the clay? Quoting Rashi. Gargashta is a dust, the quality of which is ideal for casting. The plain of the Jordan contained exactly this type of dust, as well as room for casting. The forms for the casting were made directly in the ground, since it was most impractical to do otherwise with vessels of this size. So says the Radak. And finally over here, Tsarsan. And in 2 Chronicles, this city was called Tsereda. The Malbim in 2 Chronicles says its name was changed in the days of Ezra. All right, we move on to 47. 47. Vayanach Shlomo's kolakelim meirov ma'od ma'od. Donachka mishkal hanachoshes. Shlomo left all the vessels unweighed because there were very, very, very many. Therefore, the weight of the carpet was not borne out. Was not found out. Shlomo left all the vessels unweighed because there were very many, many. Therefore, the weight of the carpet was not found out. Take a look at the Rashi over there on 47. Shlomo left, reading the English, he refrained from weighing the weight of his vessels because there were very many. And therefore, he ceased to count their weight. Excuse me. There were so many, he ceased to count their weight. In 2 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 18, the verse reads, Vayas Shlomo, Shlomo made, indicating Shlomo originally made more vessels than were really needed. This apparently bears out the opinion of the Targum, who rendered this word Vayanach as Va'atznai, he hid. Shlomo prepared more than his immediate needs and put the remainder away in the temple for future use. So says Rashi, the Radak, and the Malgam. He prepared more than his immediate needs and he put the remainder away in the temple for future use. Very prudent. Verse 48. Vayah Shlomo es kol hakelim asher beis Hashem. Shlomo made all the vessels of that which were in the house of God. Es mizbech hazav, the altar of gold, es ha-shulchan, and the table, asher alav lechem aponim zahav, upon which were the showbread, which was of gold. I did not know the lechem aponim was of gold. Where have I been? I thought it was just, you know, bread. Let's see what it said, if anything. And the table, okay, and the table were on the showbread. That's a shulchan. In 2 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 8, and we're in Pasuk 48 right now.
Since the table was gold.
So
the table upon which they
and the table were upon the showbread of gold. Thank you, sir. Boy, you know what? When I get tired, when I'm working off of two Kit Kat bars and soda and whatever, I mean, like, you know, what in the world was I reading just now? Thank you, Mrs. Brother. Mrs. Brother explained that the table was gold. Not the bread. What kind of craziness was I reading over there? Of course, there's a shulchan asher olav lechem upon him, zahav, and the table upon which sat the showbread, zahav. That table, the shulchan, was gold. Thank you. And the table. See the commentary in 2 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 8. It says, there were 10 tables in addition to that of Moses. They were arranged 5 on either side of that of Moshe. The opinion of our sages vary, the opinions, I guess, of our sages vary as to whether the lechem upon him was placed on these tables. All right. Got to go to 2 Chronicles, but it's not for now. Here we go.
And I find it interesting. Okay, so it talks about all the stuff that Shlomo made. And now it's saying, and Shlomo made. If these things Shlomo made himself.
Yeah, Mrs. Willow was saying, well, some of the Pesukim obviously were talking about Chira made, and so on. And now suddenly we're confronted by Shlomo made in this very Pesuk that I'm reading. Shlomo made all the vessels of that which were in the house of God, the altar of gold and the table of gold. So which one is it? Is it Hiram or is it Shlomo? Is that your question?
Because Well, but Sriraman says that he made all these other vessels, the basins and the lammer right. and the right. the right. shovels and the fire pans, those things. But it seems like the things of gold that go inside the Ohel Moed.
That, one moment.
That's what it seems to say. At least not Sriraman.
Right. So only all the vessels which were in the house of God. So Chiram is doing the exterior?
So it would seem.
Right. Thank you. Chiram seems to be doing the exterior, Mrs. Berlin was pointing out, and Shlomo, according to this verse, Shlomo is making the vessels which were in the house of God, the altar of gold. Or do you say, well, you know, he hired somebody, whether it's Chiram or somebody else, and whoever did that, but it gets attributed to Shlomo.
Right. But apparently it seems, at least at first blush, it seems that whoever it wasn't Chiram.
Somebody else, because otherwise I guess it would have said explicitly, Chiram did this and Chiram did that, like we've been reading all along. Suddenly you're confronted by Yahash Shlomo, stops you in your tracks, Shlomo suddenly making stuff. So see Menachos 98b, regarding the table, 10 tables, and what is Lechem Aponim, Chazal varies to whether the Lechem Aponim was actually placed on these tables. See Gemara Menachos 98b. And I believe that's exactly where the Daf Yomi is now in Masechta Menachos. So 98b, check it out if you're doing Daf Yomi. 49. Wow, you know what? I can't believe this. We have davened this up so brilliantly that we're basically at the end of the chapter. This is incredible. Might actually be able to end this tonight. Okay, here we go. 49. Ve'es ha-menoros chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismol. And the candlesticks, five on the right side, five on the left side. Lefnei ha-devir zahav sagur. Before the sanctuary, zahav sagur, pure gold. Va'perach v'haneros v'amel kachayim zahav. And the flowers, and the lamps, and the tongs, made of gold. See the footnote? Five on the right, five on the left. It's impossible to say these five were on the right side of the entrance and the other five were on the left side of the entrance, for if so, we will find the candlestick on the north side, and the Torah states specifically the candlestick should be on the south side of the tabernacle. So the Pasuk says in Exodus chapter 40, verse 24, needless to say, the entrance to the temple was on the eastern side. Excuse me, we must conclude, therefore, Moshe's candlestick was in the middle, five on its right and five on its left. So says Rashi. Incidentally, the verse quoted by Rashi, Al Yerach HaMishkan Temana, is nowhere to be found in reference to the candlestick. Instead, we find either Al Yerach HaMishkan Negba in Exodus 40:24, or we see Al Tzela HaMishkan Temana in Exodus 26:35. Okay, and the flowers, the lamps, the tongs, all gold, says Rashi, and the flowers of the candlestick. As it says by Moshe's candlestick, its knops and its flowers. You'll see that in Exodus 26:31. That was a Rashi here. And the lamp, says Rashi, these are the cups into which the oil and wicks are put. And the tongs, says Rashi, with which the wick is lifted out of the oil. Although only the flowers and the lamps were mentioned as having been made of gold, the fact was the entire candlestick was one solid piece of gold, as described in Exodus 25, verse 31. From the flower at the top of at the end of the shaft, from the flower at the end of the shaft to the lamp at the top of the candlestick, it was all gold, says the Ralbag. Wow, 50. Ba'asipos v'hamizamros v'hamizrakos v'hakapos v'hamachtos l'hov sagor. And the bowls and the musical instruments and the basins and the spoons and the censers were made of pure gold. Ba'aposos Ledalso Sabayas Apnimi, and the hinges for the doors of the inner house, the Kodesh HaKodoshim. I'm sorry, Posos Ladalsos Habayas Apanini Lakodosh Hakodoshim Ladalsi Habayas Lahechal Zahav. Okay? And the hinges for the doors of the inner house, the most holy place, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and for the doors of the house, that is, the doors of the temple, gold. So the hinges were gold. The doors were gold. Everywhere you looked, gold. Bowls, instruments, basins, spoons, censers, gold. 50. Here we go. And the bowls, as the Targum translated, the Kolaya and the bowls, either Radak, the Rabag, and the Mitzudah. Rashi, however, prefers to render this some type of musical instrument. And similarly, Mizamros means musical instruments, says Rashi. And the basins to receive the blood, says Rashi. And the spoons to serve, quote, as the vessels for frankincense, what is placed on the table with the showbread. See Rashi and the Rabag. And the censers, these were more in the form of a shovel or a rake to remove the ashes from the altar and to rake the coals and carry them from the outer altar. The Mizbach HaNechoshes in the court of the priests to the inner altar, the Mizbach HaZahav in the temple, in order to burn incense, says Rashi. And the hinges, as the Targum translates, Muglasaya, pivots or hinges. There are Dr. Obag and the Mitzvah. Rashi, however, says, these were keys. I heard that these were used to open with them the locks of the temple. That these hinges were not merely hinges or pivots, rather they were, says Rashi, keys that opened up the Beis HaMikdash. For the doors of the inner house, Dalsei Abayas, the doors of the inner house, which is the most, okay, the Dalsei Abayas HaPanimi LeKodesh HaKadoshim, for the doors of the inner house, which is the most holy place, only the hinges were of gold, whereas the doors were of wood overlaid with gold, says Rashi and Radak. For the doors of the house, says Rashi, which is for the temple, all of their entrances were of gold. And now, ladies and gentlemen, remarkably, the last pasuk in this chapter, 51, an unusually long chapter. Vatishlam kol ha'melacha asher asa ha'melech Shlomo beis Hashem. And all the work that Shlomo ha'melech, King Solomon, had wrought in the house of God was finished. Vayaveh Shlomo's katshei David aviv. Shlomo brought in the things which David his father dedicated. As a kesef, the silver, as a zav and the gold, as a kalim and the vessels, nasan ba'otros beis Hashem. He put them in the treasuries of the house of God. We read this footnote and we will be concluded. And all the work was finished. The word batishlam could be related to the work shalom, peace, of the entire staff of craftsmen working on the temple. None died, nor were they ever sick during the entire period of the construction. Of the entire staff of craftsmen working on the temple, none of them died, nor were they ever sick during the entire period of construction. As soon as the work was completed, they died. Their souls were at peace. They did not die as a form of punishment. On the contrary, they deserved great reward for their participation in such a heavenly undertaking. They died so that the idol-worshipping nations about them would not force them to build similar structures of great architectural beauty for their idols, such as the Yalkut Shimoni. Wow. That's fascinating in a very big way. And then finally, the things which David, his father, had dedicated. Although he had sufficient materials of his own with which to build the temple, nevertheless, in honor of his father David, Shlomo used some of those materials dedicated by his father for this purpose. Shlomo had plenty of stuff, but he utilized some of the materials which David had and that David had dedicated. That which remained of the silver and gold dedicated by his father he put into the treasuries of the house of God. But the Medrash explains that Shlomo did not wish to use any of those dedicated materials for the construction of the house. And I heard from scholars of Israel who said the reason was because David knew through prophetic inspiration, through Ruach HaKodesh, eventually it would be destroyed. David himself, therefore, begged that his materials should not be used, so that the idol-worshipping nation should not be able to say their idols are mightier, for they took their revenge upon the house which was built of the vast plunder and destruction which David plundered from them. Okay. Another said that the reason for his refusal was because Shlomo said thusly. According to the Midrash, Shlomo did not wish to use any of those dedicated materials, because David knew through prophetic inspiration that eventually it would be destroyed. So therefore he begged that his materials should not be used. He said, idol-worshipping nation should not be able to say, their idols are mightier, for they took their revenge upon the house, which was built of a vast plunder and destruction, which David had plundered from them. Others said that the reason for his refusal was because Shlomo said thusly, there was a famine in the days of his father for three consecutive years, and he should have squandered these dedicated materials to sustain therewith the poor people of Israel. So says Rashi, said in the Midrash and the Yad Shimoni. Mazel tov, we actually got through the rest of the chapter, and now, with God's help, we'll go on next week, Mitzvah Shem, to chapter 8. I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. A big yishar kach to you all, one and all. And let our Torah study be for a schus for the perished, those who lost their lives, who were killed in the atrocity in Pittsburgh. May we only have besuras tovos. We should only hear good besuras, good news, and Mashiach come quickly, speedily, b'mehirah v'yameinu. Amen. See you next week. Take care. Be well.